Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James, goodly afternoon to you. We're recording a little bit later today.
Yes, goodly afternoon to you too. I hope you are happy with yourself. I'm missing South Korea. Yeah, South Korea, Sweden, aren't I, to
yeah.
do this?
Well, yeah. you are. Well, I'm not going to miss it because I'm just going to open up a little browser window here on my my iMac, which has got a screen big enough for me to stream the football in one corner while doing all the recording and all my Twitter and everything else for the questions, you see? So
Tell me if anything interesting happens.
I will. It doesn't kick off till 1 o'clock, though, so...
Okay.
I think we're all right. How has your weekend been? I assume it's just been packed with World Cup football.
Basically, yeah. I finally turned 32 as well. I was 31 until I was 32, as you remember.
Oh, yes. Belated birthday greetings to you. I hope you had a lovely time. Did you do anything nice?
I watched the World Cup, basically.
Right.
I mean, despite saying on the last podcast I wasn't that excited about the World Cup, I have watched... I'd say sort of 80% of it so far.
Yeah, me too. It's just because it's on, isn't it? It's there and it's football and it's like, well, everyone else is watching it. I kind of feel left out a bit if I didn't.
Yeah, and it's been quite entertaining, hasn't it? I mean, there have been some duds, but obviously Spain-Portugal, a particular highlight.
Ooh, what a game. What a game of football that was. Fucking fantastic. And someone was telling me during the weekend, a local bar I go to. Actually, while we're on the subject of South Korea, that is the team I got in a World Cup sweep from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from a bar. You paid a tenner, you got a team at random, and my team is South Korea. So go South Korea. Go on.
Well, I also entered a sweepstake, £15 ahead. And I drew Saudi Arabia, which on the face of it was not great news. However, this is a particularly innovative sweepstake where they also run other categories. For example, there is a category for heaviest defeat. So I could be onto a winner there, 5-0 already. I mean, that looks hard to beat.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. So in this other bar, though, not the bar that I'm in the sweepstake in, I go to a couple of bars, you know, that's fine, isn't it? That's
pretty
okay.
Cool guy.
Yeah. I like to, you know, spread myself around. But anyway, they were saying that on the Friday night with the Portugal-Spain game, the bar went absolutely mental. When Cristiano Ronaldo scored that free kick, like absolutely berserk. People were watching, and it's not really one of those bars where the football is on and they've got the commentary on. There would have been music on, the TVs would have been on silent and everything else, but people just went bananas when Ronaldo scored that free kick. And it's weird, isn't it? Because if you were to go around that bar and say to people, do you like Cristiano Ronaldo? I guess the majority of people would say no. No, I don't care for him at all. I can appreciate his talent as a footballer, but, you know, cheering for Cristiano Ronaldo, nah, I don't think I'll do that. But you get caught up in the moment. I was sitting there watching it going, oh, wow. I don't know. I felt a bit dirty about it, you know, because it was just so good and so exciting and such an amazing thing to happen at that stage of the game. And then you go, it was Ronaldo. But, oh, God, it was so good, though. It was really something else.
I suppose that is the quandary of Ronaldo's career, that he is really good, but he is really awful as a person. I mean, it was one of those moments you're watching and you're thinking, I'm going to see this moment replayed, you know, in 10 years, in 20 years. It was a little bit iconic. Even in the group stage, I think that will live long in the memory, that particular match. But yeah, I mean, it's a strange kind of meta-narrative, isn't it, to the World Cup, the sort of Ronaldo versus Messi versus Neymar thing. Not going too well for Messi, you'd have to say.
No. That was a poor penalty against Iceland the other day. But that was brilliant as well, wasn't it? To watch a team like Iceland, a country like Iceland with population as small as it is, And I think it's one of those things that people don't like to talk about too much in football because it sounds like a cliche, doesn't it? But hard work and organization can take you a long way. They rode their luck a little bit, you know, here and there. But for the most part, they made it so difficult for Argentina to break them down, the way they stayed defensively organized. You know, it's not particularly pretty, but what do you expect? For a team like Iceland isn't going to come out and play expansive football against somebody like Argentina. So to see them, you know, A, equalize having gone behind and then hang on to it, save a penalty. Did Argentina hit the bar? I can't remember, but they came close once or twice as well. But what an amazing result for a country like Iceland at the World Cup. Really, really enjoyable to watch that. You know, I know a lot of people will say, we want to see attacking football, we want to see exciting football, we want to see goals. But, you know, there's something about seeing a team do that to a team that isn't Arsenal that I quite like.
Yeah, I mean, look, as a neutral within that game, you can't help but side with Iceland, can you? And they were really organised. They played with such commitment. I mean, that's not to downplay, you know, some of the stuff they did pull off going forward. There's some really nice moments they had, particularly in the first half. But it was just one of those great sort of underdog stories. And I really enjoyed that game, I must say. I suppose it's comparable in some ways, although the comparison between the teams is not the same. But Switzerland getting a draw with Brazil, I suppose, is a bit of a shock too. And they were relatively organised. I think they got away with it a bit more than Iceland did in terms of the missed chances, though.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about Switzerland, obviously, from an Arsenal point of view as well, because it was the first time any of us will have watched Stefan Lichtsteiner as an Arsenal player. Of course, people will have seen him before and seen him play for Juventus, but we're watching him now through the microscope or through the prism of red and white and being an Arsenal player. What did you make of him? I thought he was not bad at all. You know, he found it perhaps a little bit challenging at first, the pace and the nimble, lithe Brazilians giving him a bit of a hard time down that side, but he grew into the game. And what I liked most was the speed of thought when the ball came to him. He played it first time a lot and pretty much always found the man. And I think, you know, when you're a fullback and you're having to play yourself out of tight positions, that's a really good quality to have.
I think he probably will need that speed of thought to make up for his legs potentially fading over the next couple of years. And he didn't actually make it through the full match, did he? He went off with
a couple of minutes close to
the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought he did okay. I mean, look what he was up against. It was Neymar, Marcelo on that flank, Coutinho pulling to that side too. I think any player would be forgiven for looking a bit stretched in that scenario. And I thought, given that, I thought he did very well. I thought there was that bit of niggle to him that, you know, I think that we've lacked from some of our defenders in recent years. Is that fair to say? There was a quote going round as well on Twitter describing Lichtsteiner. I can't remember who it was. I think it was someone who played with him saying that the angriest footballer he'd ever met.
I'll tell you what it was, actually. I retweeted it. So if I go back over my timeline, a guy called Alex Sartre, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I hope, who's at Sartre on Twitter. Lots of E's at the end there, and that's how you say that. You've got to go E. Anyway, he says, Swedish referee Jonas Eriksson is in studio on Swedish TV talking about Lichtsteiner. He's the most angry player I've dealt with. He's always angry, and it's impossible to have a discussion with him. Is that good or bad? Is it good? I mean, in some ways, I can see the goodness of it. But in other ways, if a guy is that intractable, you might talk himself into trouble. Maybe his experience helps him get out of it. But, you know, when referees, maybe they're, I won't say they're predisposed to one side or another, but when you've got a guy who's always angry and is, like, driving you mad, maybe that has an impact on the decisions that a referee makes in a game. You know, he might give an easy free kick against you when it wasn't maybe a free kick, whereas he might be more inclined to give the benefit of a doubt to a guy who's really nice and chummy and, hey, ref, sure, mate, how's it going? Rather than,
maybe,
I'm going to kill you.
Maybe, and I think maybe you might talk yourself into an extra booking or two a season. But I do think having that kind of character in the squad is probably a good thing. I mean, when Jens Lehmann was brought back to the club on the coaching staff, I think, you know, he's another player who probably fits into that category of very angry man. And I think that a sprinkling of that within the squad is no bad thing. I thought he did all right. you know, he looked like what he is, which is a very canny, very experienced defender who's going to make the use of that and his understanding of the game to make up for some of his physical deficiencies as he gets a bit older. I thought Granit Xhaka played as well, of course, for Switzerland, and I didn't think he started great, but I thought he improved as the game went on.
Yeah, I thought it was a fairly okay performance from Xhaka. Nothing really to write home about one way or the other. Barami in midfield obviously had a bit of a niggle with Neymar throughout. I mean, you don't have to do very much to Neymar to make him fall over and scream as if he's been absolutely, you know, disemboweled with a cutlass, you know, holding his shins when he gets, you know, clipped on the thigh and all that kind of stuff. It's not great to watch. You know, he's clearly an amazing footballer, a great talent, but I do wonder if, you know, if this World Cup is going to expose him a little bit in the sense that he's been injured for such a long time, and is he actually ready? Is he properly ready for this, you know?
Yeah, and has he been playing at the requisite level? I mean, I know, you know, there were games in the French league where he seemed to be really strolling. And is he as sharp as he was during his time at Barcelona, especially after that layoff? There's so much resting on him for Brazil. There is enormous pressure. And I'm sure he probably is going to get fouled more than any other player out there, but he's definitely making the most of it based on last night.
Yeah, I think that was the stat from last night. He was fouled 10 times, which is a record for the tournament so far. I don't know, something like that. But yeah, look, he's always going to be a target. We'll see what his fitness is like and see what kind of an impact he can have on the tournament as it goes on. But, you know, you're looking at some of the results and you're looking at some of the teams. Iceland, for example, Mexico. We're seeing teams perhaps who are not necessarily the most fancied pull off really, really interesting results. Mesut Ozil's Germany were all over the place.
They were a mess.
Yeah, a total mess. I loved watching Mexico. There was something, you know, you're looking, there was one point in the second half and all of a sudden Carlos Vela picks the ball up deep in his own half and running with it. He's got pace still to burn at 29 years of age. He's not that old. You know, he's running with the ball, had their decision, it might have been first half that one actually, but anyway, had their decision making and had their final pass been better, like Mexico could have won that by two or three.
Yeah. In the first half, they had a string of chances, didn't they? You feared for them that they were going to eventually be punished for not taking them because they were breaking on Germany so well. And Vela was a really important part of it. I mean, never mind my own birthday. Carlos Vela being 29 made me feel pretty old. But it was good to see him playing and playing well. He's playing in America now, isn't he, with Los Angeles FC?
Yeah.
No longer in Europe. And there was a long period where he was out of the Mexico international side. I think there was a falling out with a coach, or he was suspended for 6 months.
Yeah, and didn't he say he didn't want to play? I think it was...
I think he did, yeah.
I'm sure we have some Mexican listeners or some Carlos Vela aficionados. Maybe Carlos Vela News is still out there.
Carlos Vela News, yeah, that was a very niche website even then.
It certainly was.
But there was a long... There you go, a hiatus. I think between 2010 and 2014, maybe he was left out of the Mexican squad, partly by his own volition. So yeah, good to see him back playing at a World Cup. I mean, he was always very, very talented, wasn't he? There was he just never quite had what was required for us in the Premier League.
I mean, I think he probably had it, but he did like a night out to Carlos Vela, it's fair to say. So maybe that was part of it. But no, I mean, an amazing result for Mexico. Great goal as well. I thought the goal was superb. How interesting to see as the striker, what's his name, Lozano?
I think so.
I'm going to just look that up just in case I've got it wrong. Mexican.
Irving Lozano.
Lozano, okay, perfect. The guy that he turned inside in the sort of right back position was none other than Arsenal's Mesut Ozil.
I know.
I mean, what does that say about the way Germany were set up?
I mean, I have to say, watching their midfield, I did sort of have like flashbacks a little bit to watching our own midfield at times last season. You know, Sami Khedira was ostensibly a holding player, charging on up the field. Khedira and Kroos reminded me a little bit of Xhaka and Ramsey when it doesn't work. I'm seeing it through an Arsenal prism, but they just didn't have any structure there, and that's just not something you associate with Germany at all, is it? I mean, and Joachim Löw, I think, has been involved with the national team for over a decade now. So you expect them to have that stability, that coherence to their team. But they looked like a classic international side of players thrown together without any discernible shape. So they've got big work to do. I mean, losing your first group game really does put the pressure on.
Yeah, it's not impossible to go on and win it from there. No. It's been done before.
Spain did it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think maybe Italy didn't do it, but in 1982, Italy started the tournament relatively poorly before going on to win it. So, look, it's not impossible. But based on what we saw yesterday from Germany, they've got a huge amount of work to do to even just find a system or something that makes them some way defensively secure, because at times it was absolutely absurd the amount of space that Mexico had where fullbacks perhaps were supposed to be, or I don't know what kind of cover the central defenders were getting from midfield either. So it was a strange old performance, and you can't really say that they deserved a great deal from that game based on the way that they played. I know they dominated possession and everything else, but they didn't really do too much in terms of chances. That late one that came off the outside of the post, that was a hell of a hit from that guy. Julian Brandt,
yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if it's the same in the coverage that you're watching, but obviously I'm watching the British coverage here, and it's all the discussion of Germany's performance seems to come back to Leroy Sané of Manchester City, and people saying, you know, why isn't he in the team? And I think, you know, given his performances for City this season, I think that's understandable, but they still have so much quality. There's such an abundance of talent. You know, a squad with those players, regardless of Sané's selection or not, should have more than enough to beat Mexico, you would say. So they've got a lot of work to do. Obviously, as an Englishman, today's the big day. This is where it all starts. It's coming home, Andrew. I don't know if you've heard about it. With Brazil and Germany and Argentina struggling, there's only one possible conclusion: England are winning the World Cup.
Yeah, so you've just set Tunisia up for an amazing 2-1 win tonight, James.
I think a dull 0-0 draw is probably the most likely scenario.
Yeah. Well, no, it'll be interesting to see how England play. It's been a much more... I think it's been a much more circumspect build-up from both the England camp and the English press to this one. You know, perhaps maybe lessons have been learned about, you know, all the chest thumping and everything else, that we'll have to wait and see what Gareth Southgate can do with the group of players that he's got. But maybe we go through some of the other results from an Arsenal point of view. Mohamed Elneny played against Uruguay on Friday. He started that game. Yeah. Our potential new signing, Lucas Torreira, only came off the bench late on, but it was a bit of a heartbreaker in the end for Egypt, going down 1-0 late on.
It was, actually, and I thought they were pretty unfortunate to lose that game. But that's classic Uruguay, isn't it? They are fighters, and they got through in the end. Torreira, I mean, we can say he made the difference, but he barely had a kick, did he, in that little spell on the pitch. I thought Elneny did very well, though. I thought he was pretty good in the midfield. But Egypt missing Mo Salah, really. They didn't have any kind of cutting edge, did they?
Yeah, I think they were looking at this game, maybe if they could hold Uruguay to a draw, then bring Salah back for the next two games. But late goal always puts pay to that. Alex Iwobi played for Nigeria. They lost 2-0 to Croatia.
They were not good. No.
Hello to all our Nigerian listeners. But that was not a good performance from them. It was disappointing, really, wasn't it?
I mean, I thought it was. Yeah,
John Obi Mikel at number 10. I mean,
I know. I mean, they did it at Wembley as well against England. But I have to say, in that game, particularly in the second half, they acquitted themselves relatively well. But I thought they fell well short of that against, admittedly, is a pretty good Croatia side. There are a lot of good players in there: Modric, Rakitic, Perisic. But I was really disappointed in Nigeria. And Iwobi was a peripheral figure in the game, really, wasn't he? He got substituted after about 70 minutes, but was never really influential in any way.
Yeah. So we had some VAR in the...
The VAR.
Yeah.
In the France game.
Yeah, too near, too VAR.
Too near, too VAR. What did you think about the VAR in the France-Australia game? What was your... response to that, particularly, I suppose, the Griezmann penalty award?
I think it just is a matter of getting used to the game carrying on and then being stopped, isn't it? Because that's something that's so
alien.
That's exactly the word I was looking for. Alien. Sorry, I just ate a mint and it's burned my mouth off.
Stronger than you anticipated.
Yeah, it is actually. So, I thought it was strange. When I look at the decision, I think it was probably the right decision to give a penalty. You know, I know.
Yeah,
did
I don't
get
think just because you touched the ball,
yeah,
it's not a foul. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so it was a strange old game, you know. But what I think is really quite interesting is the fact that they're using VAR for decisions that the officials should be getting right anyway. So
yes.
Umtiti handling the ball. I know it's quick and everything else, but that's what the officials are there for. And then there was the one in the Peru Denmark game where that went to VAR, and it was very clearly a foul. In real time, you could see that was a foul. So where I think VAR is interesting is when you have something like the Griezmann thing and, you know, the referee, you know, I don't know what he thought he saw when the challenge was initially made, but after he saw the replay or the replay was shown to him and they made the decision in the box in the sky, wherever it is, they gave the penalty. But I wonder if we're going to become a bit dependent on VAR to make decisions that referees should be making anyway.
Well, I think we already are to an extent because, you know, linesmen or whatever they're called, assistant referees, have been advised, I think that's the right word, not to flag on occasions where there's genuine uncertainty because the VAR will resolve it after the fact. But I feel like that's a slightly dangerous game. And similarly, in the case of Griezmann, you know, ultimately the referee is not going to make a call there, is he? He's not going to award a penalty because he knows he's going to get the opportunity to review. And I feel like that does take some of the impetus out of the moment, because if he makes the call, he can always reverse it. But the reluctance to make the call makes the referees a bit passive within the game.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of reservations about... I actually don't contest that VAR is getting more decisions correct. I just don't love it as a viewer and as a fan. I find it a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
I guess that's inevitable at this stage, but...
Maybe it's teething things. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, the commentators, for example, are able to tell us very quickly that's been sent for a VAR review.
Sure.
We know that, but we know that because the commentator is telling us. But maybe it's something they have to build into the experience and build into not just broadcasting, but within the stadium as well, where somehow the fans within the stadium are aware that what's happening is being reviewed by VAR in as much real time as that can possibly be done, right? So whether that's putting something up on a big screen, whether it's playing a sound through the tannoy or something, I don't know, but I don't think it's right that fans in the stadium are completely unaware that a decision is being reviewed as the game is going on, because all of a sudden it just causes confusion for those. And I think if you're the one that's in the stadium and you're paying the ticket and you're paying the expensive ticket prices, you should be as up to speed with everything as people watching at home, you know? So I think we're in the nascent stages of VAR and the way it's going to be worked in football. But yeah, you know, I can see your reservations as well, you know?
It's uncharted territory, and inevitably there will be teething problems.
Like, maybe this. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say maybe the solution is something like if an incident occurs, like the foul on Griezmann, for example, but play carries on, is there a signal the referee could give that's to say this will be reviewed? Do you see what I mean? At a point, so it's like... And also I wonder about when the play goes on in those circumstances, what happens if something happens... while the ball's still in play? Like, what if the other team go up the other end of the pitch and score? Does it just get pulled back?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or a guy puts in a terrible foul at that point?
I don't know. I mean, I guess these are things that we'll only find out in due course as and when they happen. I don't know what the situation is. I mean, why, in your opinion, was VAR not used for the Switzerland equaliser? Because that's a foul. I know it's a small foul, and it's the kind of foul that happens in the box all the time, but it's a foul that led to a goal. I mean, the guy's positioning wasn't particularly great, but replay after replay after replay of the Switzerland equaliser showed us an obvious foul from different angles, in different speeds. And, it, you know, however you want to look at it, whether it was a gigantic push in the back or a slight push in the back, it's still a foul. So why was VAR not used to review that goal. Actually, somebody said, I think I saw somebody on Twitter say that that it was used, that they did review it, but they decided that it wasn't worthy
a
of
clear error. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't see what the harm is in giving the referee, if you're going to use VAR, and giving the referee the opportunity to review that. I'm not even saying he has to overrule it,
yeah.
Because obviously this is the problem of football, right? The subjectivity to the application of the laws. You can have technology for if the ball's over the line. I think you can even have technology for offside decisions, but fouls is so much more of a grey area that it's... I think that's what we're very quickly realizing, isn't it? That
it is
impossible to be absolute in this sport, and that's sort of the brilliance of it. And I do think that if every decision was correct and made by robots, I do think the sport would be worse for it in a way. Like we wouldn't have anything to talk about. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think you know, I'm probably being, what's the word for someone who's not good at moving with technology. I'm probably being a bit of a Luddite, but I think I'm also being a bit of a romantic, and I feel like some of the romance of the game dies a little bit when they have to go away and look at a TV screen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, I think as someone who's in the stadium, I think it's such a shame, and they need to find a way to manage that stadium experience better.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just putting on my stream of the game here. That was a little bit...
Of course, you can't miss your boys.
No. Do you know what's great, though? What I really like about this World Cup, and I said this on Twitter, and this is very niche, I like the sound of the football being kicked.
Ooh.
Right?
Okay.
The microphones that they're using have got a good... bass setting on them. There's a bit of a weight to them. Sometimes you hear a ball being kicked and it's quite a sort of like a that like a smack
I understand.
Kind of thing.
Like a slap.
Yeah. And whereas this is more like a I don't know how to do the sound, like a I don't know. I like it. I approve of this part of the World Cup. That's one of the things I like. And also one of the things I like as well are the announcements that go on in the background. They seem to be pretty cool. Like there's all kinds of tannoy announcements with all the reverb and everything else. And they're adding to the atmosphere of the World Cup for me. I might build in a few of those into the background of the podcast here. Just you know, while we're talking, we could just have... And it's all echoey in the background. So maybe I'd
like that. In a variety of sort of, you know, unidentifiable languages.
Yeah, yeah. I can't speak many of them, though, unfortunately.
Is that, I mean, have we covered off the kind of Arsenal interest in the World Cup to date? I mean, Joel Campbell, Costa Rica took the bold step of starting without the only player that I really know on their team.
Yeah.
He didn't start that game against Serbia and they lost 1-0.
That is I don't know how much difference he would have made. What was interesting this morning was I was looking through our squad and Joel Campbell is the sixth longest serving player at the club right now.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it? I know he hasn't played that much for us, but that's kind of where our squad is.
That's astonishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are the five ahead? Can we figure it out quickly?
Wilshere... For now, anyway, until
Ramsey,
he goes. Ramsey, Koscielny, and then the two academy graduates, Maitland-Niles and Alex Iwobi, who've been there longer, but not part of the first team longer. If you take them out of it, he's probably the fourth longest serving first team player at the club, Joel Campbell.
We've mentioned Jack Wilshere there.
Yeah.
I tell you, a little bit of London Colney gossip for you,
yeah,
which is that Unai Emery has been holding, I don't know if you know this, but has been holding meetings with members of the first team squad who are not at the World Cup.
Right. And not on holidays.
And not on holidays, indeed. But several of them have been in to Colney to have a chat with him. Ainsley Maitland-Niles, I think, made reference to that when he, announced his new squad number and new contract. And Jack Wilshere, all I know about Jack Wilshere's talk with, it wasn't just with Unai, it was with some other executive members of Arsenal. It was very brief. Very brief indeed. And the anticipation is that he's not going to be signing a new contract anytime soon. So I think we are into a matter of days, really, in terms of how much longer he's one of our longest serving players.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. There's talk of Crystal Palace being interested in Wilshere.
Mm.
A lot of talk about West Ham, which I'm not sure about. I think they just link West Ham because he's a West Ham fan or grew up, or his dad was a West Ham fan or something like that. So I'm not quite sure how much interest there actually is from West Ham. Crystal Palace would be interesting, wouldn't it? Because that's Roy Hodgson, yeah. And he likes him, and he's played him for England. And
one would imagine that they might not have Ruben Loftus-Cheek next season because he's done quite well, so Chelsea might take him back and Jack Wilshere could
loan him somewhere else.
Well, who knows? So, yeah, probably back to Holland with him or something. But, yeah, I think Jack Wilshere would be a good fit in that role for Palace. I actually think that would be quite a good move for him. I think better than going to a David Moyes-led... Oh, it's not David Moyes anymore. It's Manuel
Pellegrini. Yeah. So... Yeah, we'll
even
have to wait.
I'd rather see him at Palace than West Ham. It's just an instinctive thing for me.
Yeah. So the other news, the big news of the week from an Arsenal point of view was Granit Xhaka signing a new contract, which I think answers one question at least for me, which was, is he the kind of player that Unai Emery fancies and wants to use in his midfield? Had he not been given a new contract, we could speculate on that a little bit and say maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Maybe they're just prepared to let him see out his deal or you know, maybe see how he fits in next season before they offer him new terms. But they've decided that the 25-year-old midfielder, Swiss international, lots of experience, is a guy who this team, I'm not saying he's going to be built around Granit Xhaka, but he's clearly going to be a fundamental part of the squad and the first team next season. So that is interesting in itself. How we're going to use him remains to be seen, but if we are under the assumption, and let's make the assumption that Lucas Torreira is going to sign from Sampdoria, is that what we're looking at? Xhaka Torreira as our first choice midfield two, if we're playing a midfield two, or what do you think?
I think it is, but I think if they can convince Aaron Ramsey to stay, I think that they might look at it as more of a three. I think that there's lovely balance across that three, and a lot depends on Ramsey. But irrespective of that, given the uncertainty of a Ramsey, given the fact that the club's mind seems to be made up on Jack Wilshere, I think signing Xhaka to a long-term deal makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it is a statement of faith in him. But as soon as Emery came in and there was that interview with him talking about, you know, what he likes in a defensive midfielder, and he spoke about how he values defensive midfielders as distributors more than destroyers, because when you're a big club, you're in possession of the ball, and what they do with the ball is more important than what they do without. Well, Xhaka is kind of you know, the perfect example of that. And hopefully Torreira is the kind of player who might counterbalance some of those flaws in his game. It's certainly a more mobile player than Xhaka.
Sure. I mean, what James Horncastle said on the Arsecast on Friday, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, James obviously knows Torreira very well, but he operates at the base of a sort of a diamond midfield for Sampdoria. So perhaps we're looking at Xhaka and Ramsey, but with Torreira playing in behind them, which then leaves you with a number 10 kind of a player, which would indicate perhaps Mesut Ozil is the guy that might be playing there. So that's certainly an interesting thing to speculate on, but we've got to obviously sign Torreira first. But, I mean, what do you think of the extension for Xhaka? Is it merited? Do you feel like... I mean, look, there's often more to contract extensions than somebody's performances.
It's how good business as well, right?
You know, it makes sense perhaps to keep a player who's coming into the prime years of his career, you know, tie him down to a new deal. And if it doesn't work out in a year's time or 18 months' time, you've still got the ability to sell him for a reasonable fee because he's under contract. You know, I'm pretty okay with it, I have to say. He's a player who's clearly got strengths. He definitely has strengths to his game. I thought he was really quite good for the last third at least of the season, maybe not quite half a season, but certainly a good chunk of the second half of the season. I thought he was very, very good for us. So maybe they're looking at those strengths and identify. They can't be blind to the weaknesses, right? So if they are aware of the weaknesses that he has in his game, A, they can be improved through better coaching, better instruction, better tactical instruction, et cetera, et cetera. But also perhaps by bringing in players who can offset some of those weaknesses around him, and maybe that's what they're planning on doing.
Yeah, there are things he does really well. I think another great asset of Xhaka, and I don't want to jinx him here, but is that he's very robust. He's very resistant to injury. He was involved in every single Premier League game last season. I think in a squad like ours, that's a useful asset. I think that he benefits from a little bit of kind of recency bias in that he tends to, well, of his two seasons with us, he's finished them both very well. But I think that it's been a journey for him to get there in both campaigns. However, what that does say about him maybe is that he is someone who has the capacity to learn and improve and to alter his situation. At least he does seem to improve. At least he does seem to, correct some of his mistakes as the season wears on. I think it makes perfect sense to sign him. I think there is a really, really good player there. I think that he just has to be complemented by the right partners, and that's not always been the case at Arsenal. So hopefully Torreira is a step in the right direction. I mean, it does feel like that is a deal that is going to get done. It might just be a question of waiting until Uruguay's participation in the World Cup is over, maybe.
Yeah. So look, it's an interesting piece of news, and it's a clear show of faith in him. And what
captain
he can do.
Captain material, do you think?
I have a sneaky feeling about that, because when you look at who the options for captain are next season, maybe Aaron Ramsey, people talk about giving it to Lichtsteiner, but like I don't think we should go through the season with another non-playing captain. I think we need to have a captain on the pitch. So he would be one of the candidates, I think. You know, him or Ramsey, I think, are the two. When you look at the players who are going to play most often next season. So,
yeah, I think if Ramsey signs the contract, I think he will get it. I think it's actually something that's sort of been discussed between the player and the club. I any means a cert or a dead thing that Ramsey does sign that contract. So
yeah,
Shaka's going to be in the frame, I think, for some time, yeah.
All right. Well, look, that's the Arsenal roundup. That is the World Cup roundup. South Korea and Sweden are playing right at this moment in time. It's still nil-nil, and we're going to take a break. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsblog. Just to tell you, if you're an Arsblog member on Patreon, we've got some good stuff coming up for you. We have a history podcast about the 2001-2002 season that is upcoming, and coming up this week exclusively to Arsblog members on Patreon, an interview I did last week with Philippe Senderos, James.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's cool.
What's he up to these days without giving too much away?
He is in MLS. He's playing in MLS for Houston Dynamo. He's been injured a bit, so he's only making his way back to the first team now. But we had a great chat about his career, his life at Arsenal, the good times and the bad times at Arsenal, what happened after that, where he went, how his career has gone. And he's very upfront, very frank about it. Smart guy, really smart guy, talks very well, has a lot of affection for Arsenal because of the time he spent here at the club. So you can hear that. It'll be out on general release in a few weeks. But if you want to hear it first, you can join up at patreon.com/arsblog for a fiver a month, €5 a month, rather. And that will get you access to the Philippe Senderos one and all the other extra content we have back there, as well as helping to keep things going around here, help support everything that we do on Arsblog and Arsblog News and all of our writers and columnists and all that kind of stuff. So if you feel like getting involved in that, you can do that. It's patreon.com/arsblog. Right.
Lovely.
Lovely
right.
Indeed. So I've got a question for you first.
Go on.
Yeah, it's an easy question, especially for you. It comes from Kirsan Apala, who is at Toronto Gooner 7, and he wants to know, why do people have so many diverse opinions on Mesut Ozil's performances after each and every game? Is he so hard to analyse?
I don't know if this is a reference to the fact that I got into a Twitter storm of my own during the Germany game.
Right.
Because I observed that I felt that Germany's decision to play Mesut Ozil as a very advanced number 10, albeit one who did run back when required, left their aging and not massively mobile central midfielders very exposed. And I espoused that I felt that they would have been better served by going with a third central midfielder and letting Ozil play off the flank, as they did in 2014 when they won the World Cup.
Right.
A lot of people felt that I was being very unfair on Mesut Ozil, but it wasn't simply a question of... I wasn't actually criticising Ozil. I thought he did fine, he did nothing wrong. As discussed, he was the guy who ran back when they did break through that midfield. But I do think he is a very curious player because there is a huge benefit to him. But I do think that that comes with costs that have to be managed. And I feel that Germany didn't manage those costs particularly well yesterday. And I feel that Arsenal, historically, haven't. And one of the big questions for me of next season, one of the things I'm really intrigued to see, is how Unai Emery accommodates him. Mm. It's a really, really big question. We talked before the break about a diamond midfield, and in theory, that could work really well. You know, you've got a clear four there, Torreira at the base, Xhaka and Ramsey either side, Ozil as a 10, and what that also gives you is a two up front. But I can't think of a diamond ever being particularly successfully applied in the Premier League. So if he does go that way, there'll be big question marks over that. Ozil himself is, I just think he's one of the game's biggest names and game's biggest players. So his role and his contribution is always going to invite attention, much like we're all talking about Messi and Neymar and Suarez. I think Ozil's in that bracket.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I get it from that point of view, from a reputation point of view, but you very rarely, I know Neymar is off the back of a poor performance last night, but you never really hear people say, well, Ronaldo was shit or Messi was shit, or even if they were generally a bit shit, they tend to crack in with goals. You know, they score a lot of goals, those guys. So there's real product. Fuck. Jesus, what a save. Sweden almost scored there. Ball came across, squirted through the defence. The guy is 6 yards out, and I'm just watching it again here. Oh, straight at the keeper. straight at the keeper, whoever the Swedish number nine is.
Berg is his name.
Berg. Yeah, he's that's exactly what he is. He's Berg and no Kemp.
There's and your man Cho Hyun Woo has delivered the save.
Wow. I mean, like, keeper got there, but, you know, he hit it straight at him from really close, and he should have scored. But anyway, what I was saying was you get people talking about Ozil and saying he's shit. Oh, header just wide. They say he's shit, or they'll talk about him being rubbish or ineffective, and he's one of those players you can look at, and if you watch a game, you might think, well, what did he do? And then you look at the stats and you see that he created more chances than you remember, or made more key passes, or, you know, was the man who had the most touches of the ball. You know, I like him. I really like Mesut Ozil as a player. But at the same time, I have doubts over him producing when we, Arsenal, have really needed him most. And then some of those doubts are offset by the fact that I think Arsenal's problems have been more structural than one individual performing above and beyond to offset those problems, if you know what I mean. So
I agree with that. I think the problem of Ozil, and I think Aaron Ramsey's a little bit like this as well, is that he is a player who, if you play him in his best position, is so defining of a team's shape that we have never been good enough to sustain that. And that's not, I'm not saying that that is his fault. I'm saying that he is that type of player.
Yeah.
You need such a solid platform, and we're not good at solid platforms.
Yeah. I also think, and this, people might laugh or they might think I'm crazy, but I think he's got one of those faces people don't like.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. It's more than his face, isn't it? It's his demeanour as well.
Yeah, you know, the style, the running style. He's languid, I guess, and some people will confuse that with laziness. I don't think he's lazy. I really don't. I don't think he's a particularly great defender. But when you don't have to dig too hard to find the stats for the number of sprints he does, for the yards covered, etc., etc. You know, but I just think he's got one of those faces as well that people don't take to.
I mean, the problem is that any analysis of Ozil is difficult, and I think requires nuance, and nuance is a diminishing quality in the world, particularly online. And like, yeah, he does sprint, but, you know, he can't tackle and he can't win a header. Those are just, that's definite. That doesn't mean he doesn't work hard or have other qualities. I just think that, I suppose what it is that, I suppose the reason he invites so much debate is that debate these days is so definitive. It's Ozil is a genius or Ozil is a fraud. And, you know, if that argument can rage forever because neither is necessarily correct. You know, everything needs to be more qualified than it ever possibly can be in 140 characters. So it's a fertile debate because it's not one that can be clear-cut.
Yeah. But is there not also a measure of expectation when it comes to your club record signing, when it comes to, you know, a guy who's being paid £300,000 a week or whatever it is, that you've got to perform to that level, that in itself invites a measure of scrutiny that's not applied to other players, right? So
I personally feel that Ozil's current wage that he's on now at Arsenal is not a wage that his performances have ever justified over a period of more than 2 months. I don't think that he's ever been a 350 grand or whatever it is a week player for us over the course of a season.
Sure.
So,
yeah, at the same time, you can understand the importance of keeping him and giving him the deal, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I would agree with that. But if that's what it took...
Yeah, that's what it took. And I understand, you know, a bit like when we had to kind of, it's not the same situation, when we had to overpay Theo Walcott significantly to keep him. It was very important for the club. He wasn't necessarily worth that money, probably even less so than Ozil is worth his. I think the problem now, it's only a problem if you perceive it that way, but is that we have made that commitment. So we have to make the team function around him or make him function within the team.
Yeah. I think that's the key, not necessarily the first one, the second one.
I would argue that is something that Arsene Wenger never really pulled off to the degree that, say, Real Madrid did when they had Ozil in their books.
Sure. Okay.
So I can't remember what the original question was, but I feel like...
The original question was, why is he so hard to analyse? Or is he so hard to analyse?
I think because his contributions... I think it's because his negative contributions are sometimes more visible than his positive ones. But that doesn't mean that that is the correct balance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... He looks... Sometimes he looks worse than he is. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I mean, I think if you were to say, you know, when you look at his stats from last season, people will say, was Ozil any good last season? A lot of people say, no, he was terrible. Or he didn't perform anywhere near as well as we would expect him to perform. And yet, he ends up with 14 assists. Five goals. You would expect more goals, perhaps, from a player of his quality. So, you know, I think, like you say, the debate is needs to exist more in the middle than at the fringes. So,
But it's one of the really fascinating things, isn't it, about next season, what's going to happen with Ozil. I do think that's a huge question and something we'll talk about a lot more over the next year or so.
Yeah, for sure.
Should we have another question?
Yes.
Imagine if it was also about Mesut Ozil, where we just did the whole... But that's the thing, you could. I really think you could just do... Oh, I'll tell you what, this isn't a question, but Di Marzio, the Italian transfer
guru,
title man. Yeah. Did I just dream this? I saw it on a screen and then I flicked over. It says that Napoli are asking about taking Petr Cech on loan.
I saw stories about that over the weekend.
Did you?
Yeah, I saw that doing the rounds. But it would be very strange to me that we would do that after giving Petr Cech the number one jersey, because clearly that's a decision that's been made, I would assume, in consultation with the new manager. Do you want to keep Petr Cech? Okay, well, let's give him the number one jersey. South Korea having a player taken off here, looks like he's absolutely bollocksed his hamstring. He was landed funnily after going stretching for a header, so... Park is off and Kim is on. So there you go.
Couldn't be clearer.
Yeah.
I can't see
us moving Petr Cech. No.
By the way, this isn't a question from a listener, but what do you make of the stories about the supposed goalkeeper target? Do you think that's someone coming in to be number one or someone coming in to be number two? His name is Leno, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean... I've read mixed reports about him. Good shot stopper, but apparently lapses in concentration. His distribution is not particularly great at times. You know, are peppering his career at an age when those things should be on the wane. So people who watch more Bundesliga than me have misgivings about him at the price in particular, because I don't think he's that cheap, is he? We're talking 25 million.
20 million plus, yeah.
So, I don't know. I can't confess to have seen him a great deal. In terms of the age profile, in terms of the experience, I think he ticks the boxes of the player that you want to bring in. Whether they see him as somebody who can be developed. Apparently, he's a big favourite of Sven Mislintat, so...
Yeah, long-term.
Yeah, so whether they see him as somebody who can come in, work alongside Petr Cech, the experience of Petr Cech, work with a new goalkeeping coach as well, and maybe iron out those flaws in his game and work on those to help him realise his potential, maybe that's what they're doing in terms of the goalkeeper. So, you know, we'll wait and see, I guess.
I feel like if it is him, he'd be coming in to play the cup games, to play the Europa League games. Cech would stay Premier League number one probably for another year, and then see how Leno does. You know, it gives us an opportunity to have a look at him in that time, and if he's not the guy, maybe look to someone else. But it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, more money than I thought we'd be spending on a goalkeeper.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, I should probably ask a question.
Okay.
So Let's have this one. It's from Gunnar Pride, who's at Gunnar underscore Pride. And Gunnar Pride asks, how beneficial will it be for the youngsters to play in the Checkatrade Trophy this coming season? Will it be used for the likes of Nelson, Willock and Ketia and co, or youngsters further away from the first team? Have you followed this story at all?
Yeah, about I just saw the Checkatrade Trophy? Yeah, I just saw a little bit of it there before we came on air. Gunnar UK... at Gunnar UK, who's Rob, was saying, are you disappointed that we're contributing to the devaluing of a cup competition by joining the Czech Trade Trophy with our under 21? So do you want to explain what this is?
Well, yeah, as far as I understand it, it's the former Johnston's Paint Trophy, isn't it? So it's the contested a cup competition, I think with group stages, that is contested between the teams in League One and League Two.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a minor English football trophy that they, in order to introduce a bit of glamour and as part of the commission's football development findings that the FA held a few years ago, they have invited a series of top flight teams to contribute. I think it's under 21 teams too. And there are rules about who can actually play. I think players who are over the age of 21, I think you can only use two in your matchday squad, and only two players who've played more than 40 first-team games. So this really is focused on the younger elements of the squad. I'm not even sure if people like Nelson or Willock would feature in it. I think it might be the tier below that. But do I think it's a bad thing?
I tell you what I think. I think it's a good thing for us.
Yes, I agree.
Under-21s, because... you know, reserve team football, youth team football, under 23 football is all good and well, but you can only go so far playing at that level. And when you're playing football against experienced professionals, against men, against guys who are perhaps more wily and canny, you know, at League One and League Two level, you can be quite sure that there's a few guys who've got a touch of the Lichtsteiner about them, you know, a bit of the bastardry, strong, physically intimidating, imposing. I think it's great for our young players to play against those teams. Whether it's great for those teams and those clubs and that competition, I'm not necessarily sure. It seems to me that the benefit is only for the development of young players at top clubs rather than the trophy itself. I could be wrong. Maybe it will add a real extra dynamic to this trophy. Certainly, it's added focus to it and a bit of interest from our point of view, because it's not something I would have had any interest in whatsoever. And if, you know, Arsenal under 21s are playing against Colchester or I don't know who, you know, it raises the profile of the competition and of the trophy and of the other club and everything else. So I think there's an interesting rule, isn't there, that all the games will be played away from home. So there's no question of Arsenal under 21s playing at the Emirates. They've got to go away from home and they've got to go to different places and different stadiums and perhaps facilities that aren't what they're used to at London Colney or Hale End or whatever. So from our point of view, I think it's really positive for those players. It could be positive for the other clubs. It could be positive for the competition itself. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see on it. I mean, my gut feeling is that it can't hurt. At first, maybe, you know, when we get down the road a little bit, we'll find out that there are problems that we haven't considered. But yeah, from our players' point of view, I quite like the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a Wolves fan about this. Wolves obviously were in the Championship last year. They entered a young underage side into the competition last year, and they got some great experience for some of their younger players and had some really exciting games. I think, you know, the fan I was speaking to had travelled to some of these games and said there was a great atmosphere. And they felt like proper cup ties, you know, because you were going away from home and you are playing against teams down the league. And for those teams, if you're a fan of a League Two side, this is realistically your only chance, your only prospect of a Wembley final. In some ways, an Arsenal Man City final, you know, in this competition at Wembley next season. But yeah, selfishly, as an Arsenal fan, I do think it's really good. And I think we will be if we're expecting an easy ride through to the final, I think we'll be really surprised. I think it will be very tough for those kids to go down against some of those old pros in the lower leagues. And I think it will be a real, real challenge. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it'll teach them a lot. You know, you can be sure they'll be... You know, as focused and professional as they might be, there'll be a few that will learn quite a lot along the way about how to behave and how to play and how to deal with situations on the pitch and everything else. Like if you've got a grizzled center half or an old veteran midfielder who's going to, like, you know, really put it about, that's something for you to learn. And if you're going to do flicks and tricks and you end up getting booted up in the air, well, you know, welcome to football. Welcome to the way that the game is played across the world, whether people like to think it or not. You know, there's a lot to learn when you're a young player, and you can only learn so much playing against other young players is when you come up against other teams and other men that I think a huge part of the development occurs. So, yeah, I'm okay with it, and I'm interested to see how it's going to go. So, okay, here is a question from Puneet Verma, who says, which two current players, when combined, would be the answer to our problems? For example, I always used to think that a Giroud-Welbeck hybrid would have been the perfect striker.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. We've attempted to crossbreed certain players, I seem to remember, with no success. You know, it's not like Jurassic Park. Nature doesn't find a way. What are our problems? Let's identify our problems.
Midfield.
And then come up with our solution.
The base of our midfield.
The base of our midfield. Well, I feel like... I mean, it'd be quite nice to give, say, Granit Xhaka Mohamed Elneny's engine. I would like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
Or maybe... I mean, the thing is, we haven't even really got the midfielder that I want half the parts off. Do you know what I mean? anything coming to mind for you?
I think like a Hector Bellerin, Nacho Monreal crossover would be
a hell of a fullback.
That'd be a great fullback, wouldn't it? You know, the pace of Bellerin and the experience and wisdom of Monreal. Bit of goal scoring in there, bit of creativity in there. Yeah, I think that'd be a decent
like
one.
That.
Yeah.
What if you could take... You know, the creativity of Mesut Ozil, but also add that clinical edge of Aubameyang, say. You know, that would be some attacking player.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sort of a bit like Thierry Henry.
Yeah, that's true. That is true, yeah. Just make a new Thierry Henry from those.
I'd rather just have Thierry Henry if we can. If we can have Thierry Henry and Patrick Vieira, then I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's all we need to do. Just go back to the past and live there.
But again, like Jurassic Park, if there's a mosquito somewhere that bit Patrick Vieira...
We've got to wait millions of years. You see, we've got to wait for that mosquito to be encased in amber... And then for Jeff Goldblum to come along and do his little speech about butterfly wings, and then six fucking movies down the line in the franchise, we might get what we want.
Do you think all characters that Jeff Goldblum plays in films should just be called Jeff Goldblum?
I think there's an essence of Jeff Goldblum that is there in every single character that he plays. Like, you know the way sometimes...
They should all just be called Jeff, I'm convinced.
You know the way sometimes you see an actor and you go, oh, wow, I completely forgot and it was him, or he looks so different or whatever.
Transformative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People who can like wear costumes or grow beards and disguises or whatever the hell it is, you know, or they play against type in some way that it's so anathema to who we think they are in real life that you're going, oh, that's startling. I forgot, you know, Jeff Goldblum is always... You can't look at Jeff Goldblum and not think that you're looking at Jeff Goldblum. It's impossible.
Mm.
Impossible.
And everyone loves Jeff Goldblum, don't they? I've never heard someone dislike Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, yeah. They do. They seem to.
Someone I know went to see him in a play, and they said that even when he was in a play, like, he was basically just, like, looking out at the audience the whole time, sort of smiling at them like, hello, I'm Jeff Goldblum. And they loved it because you'd be so happy just to see Jeff Goldblum. You don't care what he does. He wouldn't even have to do the lines. If he just started talking about his life, I think people would just start clapping.
I would quite like to sit down with Jeff Goldblum. Like if I was in a panic situation or a hostage situation, let's say you walk into a bank and all of a sudden the bank gets robbed, but Jeff Goldblum was one of the guys in the bank fellow customer, client. Like, I would be comforted by that because I feel like Jeff Goldblum would be able to talk us out of it. He'd be able to convince the robbers, come on, guys. You know, what are you doing with your lives? Yeah. He'd keep everything calm. Yeah, I like Jeff Goldblum.
I think everybody does. Listen, more transfer updates coming in. I like this sort of... I feel like we're presenting Sky Sports News.
What?
Joel Campbell speaks out on his future.
What?
He says, the World Cup won't change my life. I don't come to show myself. I come to help my national team. I know about my contract and I know who I am. God has a plan for me.
Wow.
We wait and see what God's plan for Joel is.
What if it's to become the greatest harmonica player of all time?
Then that will be a story worth watching unfold.
Joel, and
I think it could be. Yeah. I mean, he's got to be do something on the bench for Costa Rica. Learning to play the harmonica might be a useful use of his time.
Have you ever tried to play the harmonica?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I couldn't even get to grips with it.
Yeah. Oh.
I just blow into it and move up and down. Have you got one?
No, I used to have one. Like, I bought one when I was a teenager, and then it was like,
same.
I can't even conceive of how to play this. Like, if it's a
the
piano...
The hole's too small. Are you choosing which hole you're blowing through?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. I mean, like a piano, you go, okay, I know if I sit down, I go press the keys in the right order. But this is all about, like, which tiny hole do I blow into, and do I suck or do I blow?
Yeah, it's like trying to learn to play the bagpipes or the accordion or something. It's magic. There's no point trying to get involved with it. Do you know what I haven't done?
What?
I haven't pronounced the Turkish guy.
Oh, yes, the Turkish guy. Now, you sent me an audio file within 24 hours of the last week's podcast.
I learned my lesson.
So, yeah, look, so people, if you think James is, an indolent, tardy bastard, that's not true.
I'm not always.
He had it done within 24 hours. So I don't want to take any of the spotlight away from you, though. So, go ahead and regale us with the correct pronunciation of the Turkish lad that we haven't signed yet and probably won't sign.
Well, if I play this, will you hear it? Hang on, if I hold it really near the phone. Tell me if you can hear this.
Yeah.
Çağlar Soyuncu.
Did you get that?
I did.
Çağlar Soyuncu.
I can play it here.
I'm going to do it fast.
I can play it here. Hang on. Let's see if we can all hear it. Hang on.
Çağlar Soyuncu.
Yeah? Did you hear that?
Yeah. That's my father-in-law there helping me out.
Well, he's Turkish, right?
He's Turkish. He's in Istanbul at the moment. So, Çağlar Soyuncu. I mean, that's not what I would have guessed. It wasn't even close, to be honest.
Charlie Smith, we were calling him last week, so we're back on track.
We're not far off with Charlie Smith. Charlie Smith was closer than some of my efforts.
It really was. It really was. I'm trying to... Oh, here's a question from Liam Stokes. Is it my question or your question?
Yeah.
It is.
I don't know. I keep not doing the questions. You do a question.
I'll do a question. It comes from Liam Stokes, and he wants to know, are you worried that our transfer business is being held up because David Ornstein has become distracted by the World Cup?
No, but I did enjoy David Ornstein tweeting, saying that every time he tweets anything that's not Arsenal news, he gets streams of abuse. I mean, it's a cross to bear, David, but, as our Messiah, you will bear it. I think, I don't think that's anything to do with it. I'm not worried about any of the holdups, really. I'm unusually calm about the transfer business.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm chilled out because, it's June. The weather is warm. I'm spending a lot of time outside with the dogs, and you've got a new puppy, you've got to exercise the absolute shite out of her. So, I'm just coasting through the month of June. And que sera, sera. I'm not, it's too easy to just continue with all the baggage that we had from previous summers. I feel like we've had there's a new thing going on. That's not a great description of it.
That old saying, there's a new thing going on.
There's a new thing going on, and baby, you better do it.
It's like we're lyricists. That would be a great pop song.
It really
There's a new thing going on, and baby, you better do it. I'm not bothered about the transfer business because I am distracted by the World Cup, as you've discussed. And Tony Kent, who's at 2-0 down, says, is there any player who's caught your eye at the World Cup so far? that you would like to join us? And then he's put his little addendum, Golovin, maybe?
Is that how you pronounce his name? Golovin sounds like... I don't know. I haven't got any
Russian family, so I can't sort that one out as well.
Golovin. Yeah, Golovin, I don't know. It sounds better than Golovin. Yeah, that sounds like shoes you wear in the wet.
Golovin the Goblin.
Is there anybody that I've really seen that I'm going... I mean, the guy who scored for Mexico... But then he just scored for Mexico, you know, so it was...
He was linked with us, apparently,
yeah.
Once upon a time.
Probably.
Yeah, he's quite young, like 22, I think he is. So, yeah, he would be a contender. I actually really like Golovin. I think he's a really nice player on the eye. He was really good against us, actually, I thought, in the Europa League. But
yeah.
I'm not sure he's what we need, necessarily.
No, I don't think so. We've got plenty of those kind of players, don't we? Is there anybody? Not yet, but I mean, it's only 3 or 4 days old, so I think we have to have a bit of time to decide. Oh, Sweden almost, well, no, they didn't almost score. A guy headed
maybe
over.
Maybe the South Korean goalkeeper is keeping your guys in it.
Yeah, no, I don't think this was a save. I think he just headed over. He did, yeah. He headed over, whoever it was, for Sweden. It wasn't Berg this time. Oh, it was number 17. You've got your squad sheets in front of you, don't you? Your World Cup world.
I had it, but my wall chart with all the players on.
Yeah.
Number 17, I feel like that's... let's have a look. Number 17 is Klassen.
Right.
There's a number 7, Larsson. Is that Seb Larsson?
Yeah, it's Seb Larsson. He's just taking a corner for Sweden right there. Former Arsenal player. Now he's about to take a throw.
33 years old.
He's about to take a long throw. Here comes the throw. It's not that long. It's a bit floaty. Keeper's come out and he's caught it, and it's going to be halftime now. Sweden 0, South Korea 0.
Can't wait to get tucked into the second half.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Well, right, one final question before we go.
Go on.
It comes from Jared J. Tan, who's at Jared J. Tan, and he says, would you take a job where they took off $1,000 from your salary each year, or pounds, or euros, or whatever the equivalent is in the country in which you're living, but instead they gave you your paycheck in giant checks each week, like the one that lottery winners get?
No, I wouldn't do that. I mean, I could see that it would be fun for a bit, but surely that's just inconvenient. You've got to carry that check around, and you're going to look a fool. And everyone's going to know how much money you make.
Yeah. I mean, I think that question would probably be better if they gave you an extra $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't see there's any benefit there. When I took my brother away on his stag do, I did, it's quite an old joke, but I printed out his boarding pass, like incredibly big, like, you know, 4 foot across or something like that, so that he had to try and get through security with it.
And
that was fun. Oh, I mean, eventually I had to use the digital version I had on my phone because he was trying to scan it on the thing and it just like wouldn't. And someone came up to him and said, you know why it's not working? You've printed it too big. I thought, yeah.
Thanks very much.
That is why.
Thanks very much.
But to be fair, no, do be sensible in airport security. It's important. But I think, no, I don't want that job. I don't see what's good about it. I'm getting less money and I've got this big cartoon check that tells everyone I'm getting less money.
Okay, so what if you got £10,000, dollars, euros more every year for that? Every week, you've got to pick up a giant novelty check and deposit it in the bank. Probably won't even fit.
£10,000 raise per year.
Yeah.
Yeah, in my situation, I will do that. I'll happily... And I'll pose for a picture with the check as well. like I've won some sort of competition.
Yeah.
Or like I've done a fun run for charity. Yeah, I will. Would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could do it. I mean, I work for myself, so I could pay myself with a giant novelty check anytime I wanted.
Why aren't you doing this more often?
I don't know, but like, are giant novelty checks actually legal tender?
Tender.
Or, you
know,
is it just for show? Is it just for the photo opportunity? Because, you know, a checkbook, I think I've a checkbook.
Checks in themselves are disappearing.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I paid for something with a check. I have a checkbook here somewhere, but they're normal. They're just sort of check size. Actually, I don't think it would work because now when you go to the bank, I had to lodge a check for the first time in ages the other day as well. And you have to do it in a machine. You've got to stick the check in the machine. Yeah. The machine reads the check.
The robot reads it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is going to work at all. I don't think it's going to work.
I think it's a flawed proposition. I think it's all bad news if you're getting a big check.
Yeah.
We need to hear about this, you know.
What was going on?
Why would a big check be good?
What was going on there, Jared? What was happening? What was happening in your head when you asked that question? What was happening
it's
in my
Napoli
head?
Who won a big check.
What was happening in my head when I asked? Oh, dear. Oh,
yeah, that was terrible, wasn't it? But I felt obliged. I felt obliged to do it.
I'm just watching an ad here on the TV. Jermaine Genus. Giacomo.co.uk.
He got annoyed. Yeah, Giacomo, that's sort of clothes for larger people, isn't it? It goes
Is
up
it?
To 5XL.
Oh, yeah. Really? But they just look like terrible clothes.
Yeah, it's weird because they, and on the adverts, they're like from small to 5XL. And I was like, no one's buying small on Giacomo.
Right.
It's also weird because Jermaine Genus isn't a big guy.
No.
But it's like, you know, if you are a big guy and you want to look like Jermaine Genus, Giacomo's the brand for you.
I don't know why anybody would want to look like Jermaine Genus.
It's a very small Venn diagram, isn't it?
It is.
People who are really large and who love Jermaine Genus. It's a very niche product.
It really is. It really is. But then lots of stuff is niche and, you know, que sera, sera.
Yeah.
Let people do what they want, I say. That's what I say.
Except Jermaine Genus.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be allowed to do what he wants.
Right. I think we should leave it there. So thanks to everybody for listening. We'll have some kind of a podcast on Friday, I guess, depending on what happens between now and then. Hopefully some Arsenal stuff will happen. Hopefully you're all enjoying the World Cup. Oh, do remember, if you want to give us a rating or review on iTunes, we'd like that, please. That would be good for us.
That'd be fantastic.
You know, everyone else is up there with their ratings and reviews for the World Cup and everything else. So we don't want to feel left out. We want to be high up the iTunes charts. So please, if you haven't done so already and you feel like doing it, give us a rating or a review. The history stuff, the Philippe Senderos interview, available on our Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. Sign up there if you haven't already. And we'll catch you on the next one. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.